minutes on any given night.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome. Welcome to the Tuesday, February 17th, 2009, Carrboro Board of Aldermen meeting. A number of you have signed up to speak on items that are on our printed agenda, and I'm going to call on you when we get to those items on our agenda. But if you have a matter that is not on our printed agenda, then I'm going to get you to come up first and petition us first. Before we begin that process, though, I wanted to just make a little brief announcement, if I may, that I was really excited and proud to learn that one of our own local residents, Ms. Ellen Perry, has been invited to speak at the International Self-Advocates Conference, this Self-Determination Conference, it's going to be in May of this year in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And I know we were already proud of her, but I just wanted to say congratulations to her.
Yep.
All right. I have a couple of people who are signed up to speak on matters that are not on our printed agenda. Are y'all also going to speak on a matter not already on our agenda? Sally is.
Yeah.
They keep pointing further and further to the left. What's your name? David. All right, David's going to speak. Okay. The first person I'm going to call on is Sally Green, if you would come up.
Thank you, Mayor Chilton, and everyone else. And I'm going to speak to you briefly about a project that we'd like your involvement in. Let's see if you can pass this. You're familiar with the Chapel Hill Community Art Project, which happens every year. I know Carrboro volunteers have been active in that project all 6 years, and they are this year as well. This year, the Community Art Project is actually an expanded version. It's a collaboration between the town of Chapel Hill and the UNC Humanities Program, and it's actually an art and public history project. And 4 days of events are planned, in fact, one of them has already happened, in which anyone in the community can come and participate in journal writing and storytelling and an oral history booth, kind of like the StoryCorps model that's going to be contributed by the Southern Oral History Program. There's a genealogy workshop component to it. And the art project is done in part by Lynn Bregman Blass, who is with me. I also have Steve Wright from the Chapel Hill Arts Office. And I'd like if I could, for Lynn just to speak very briefly about the art project, which you see on your postcard.
Very brief is not always easy for me, but I will try. We're asking for support in doing this project. All of those things that you see on the cards are all Leah Sobsey and I did this project in Durham using our own personal histories. And these are all archives of things stuffed in the attic, everything from recipes to photographs going back generations to old love letters to report cards that we scanned, worked with, and then put on reams of adding machine tape and then pulled it through beeswax so it became archival, and it was 30 feet by 15 feet. And the city of Chapel Hill and Carrboro have asked us to create this using the archives of the community. And so it really is about the individual within their community. It's about valuing the individual, the stories they have to say, what they have to tell, and visually representing that. So as a brief, just brief.
Thank you. And so the way we'd like to ask for your participation is that the fourth of these four events is going to take place in the Century Center. We've reserved the great room of the Century Center and a couple of the downstairs rooms for the writing workshops. And with the preface that last year your public arts committee very generously supported the Chapel Hill Art Project with a $500 cash donation, we're respectfully asking for you to donate the use of the Century Center to us up to $500 worth of time there. Right now, what we have reserved is about $330 worth of time. We may that need to add a couple of hours. It won't even be $500 if we add the time that we're even thinking about adding. But that's our request to you. I'd also add that for the Carver event, we are working on making special efforts to bring out the Latino immigrant population and other immigrant populations, which is challenging, but we're working with various organizations to do that, and I think that'd be appropriate for the location and for, I know, your community and what you're interested in. So that's our request.
Thank you very much. We would normally refer this type of request to the staff to get their reaction. So I think we'll, presumably that's what we'll do tonight, and hopefully we'll be able to get some response back to you relatively soon.
What's the date?
What's the date of the event?
The event is the 28th of March.
28th of March.
Yep, right. Okay. And I apologize for not being sooner, but we tried to come earlier and you were snowed out.
Okay.
I'd just like that, you know, I appreciate our referring it to staff, and I believe that we should. I wholeheartedly support the request.
Thank you.
All right. Is there a motion to refer this to staff?
So moved. Second.
Okay. Moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. So we'll hear a report back from our town staff about that, hopefully relatively shortly. Peggy Mish has signed up.
As you know, I've been representing the Orange County Bill of Rights Defense Committee on a number of things, and we've been working on immigrant rights, and I think this request that I want to make to you is related to that issue of helping the immigrants in Carborough, doing something for them, and I hope this isn't a budgetary or a huge budgetary request with this. But I was reminded by Joseph Polcaro, who a number of years has been working with boys, girls, and adults playing soccer. He's a soccer coach. He has a big chain of other coaches, and he's been doing this throughout Orange County and sometimes having to use space in Durham County. And there is no soccer field or soccer fields in Carborough, within the limits of Carborough, and he suggested, and I'm bringing this to you as a way of saying this is something that you could do for the immigrant community. Particularly, everybody knows Hispanics love soccer, and I don't know what's available at Anderson Park, but he seemed to think if it weren't completely used, their space at Anderson Park to have one or possibly two soccer fields there. So that's why I'm making the request, and I guess I should bring it up that in the Carborough Citizen on page 3, just the most recent one, this professor's book about Siler City soccer and how much this has helped the Hispanic children in Chatham County, and last night was wonderful because of the turnout of the Chathamites to support the county commissioners in Chatham County for passing the resolution to say that Chatham County is not going to sign on to the 287G program to go out and seek undocumented residents, and the turnout was fantastic. And this Paul, and I say his name right, I don't speak Spanish well, but it's Carabras, I guess his name is Paul Carabras. He's on the faculty at UNC, and he has worked with soccer and children in Chatham County, and some of them were there supporting the county commissioners, and they stood up, and some of them have gone on to college, UNC, and other places from his program, and they were so happy to be able to participate in the community. And I know Carborough can also help. That would be a big, I think, an asset for Carborough to have soccer fields for the community.
Thank you, Peggy. We have a plenty lengthy agenda tonight, so we probably won't delve into a discussion of soccer field issues tonight, but I appreciate
your budgetary.
No, and I, well, what I was going to say is I think there are a number of you know, things that may possibly at some point help out with the number of soccer fields in our broader community. But there are issues that we need to work with Orange County government on, and I think it's helpful to have somebody to prompt us to renew our look at that. Dan?
Yeah, Peggy, I just wanted to make sure you're aware that the county, and Randy, correct me if I'm wrong, the county, I believe, has two soccer fields planned for the Twin Creeks Park, which is just north, which actually will be within Carborough, within our planning jurisdiction. And we have a multi-use field plan for our Martin Luther King Park, so that would be available for soccer, as well as the existing multi-use field at Anderson Park. And beyond that, we don't have any land right now.
Beyond that, we are strongly advocating and continue to advocate.
Well, I'm going to bring that because he seemed to think that Anderson was already flat.
Yeah, well, let me go ahead.
Wait, I'm just going to say, and we have a community soccer field at Smith.
Yeah.
Right. As well, and actually, that's an issue that the county would like to revisit with us about possibly astroturfing those fields. I know. So that's a another conversation that we need to have. But thank you for
being
back.
In the future, though, I guess. That's a problem.
Yeah. Well, no, we have the community field at Smith right now.
Wow.
At Smith?
Yes.
Smith
yes.
exists. And actually, the Latino leagues use that constantly because that's a very popular field.
That's the problem because they're over.
There's a limit to how much those fields can be used, at least as they are now. If they were astroturf, they could be used a lot more, and that's sort of the issue. But we need to have at some point a more intelligent conversation with the county government about that issue. So they are very interested in it. I think we may not have understood entirely what some of their request was a year or so ago when we last looked at that issue. So anyway, we'll revisit it. Thanks, Peggy.
Thanks, Peggy.
Okay, and now the one and only David.
Hi, my name is David Knessable, and I'm a member of Professor Blau's Social Economic Justice class, and I'm honored to address the town alderman and the people of Carborough. I'm just one of the many students who have dreamed of this day in our local history for some time now. On behalf of students from Judith Blau's two sociology classes, I would like to urge the local government of Carborough and Chapel Hill to make human rights a priority within the local community and policy. The two classes of which I'm a part have participated in a tremendous amount of community activism, both within both towns, to educate citizens and shop owners about human rights principles and fair trade practices. My classes worked hard to draw attention to the spirit of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights within the community, and the citizens of Carborough have responded. What surprised members of my class the most is how many members of Carborough were already on the same page as my class, other university students and groups, as well as many nonprofits and private citizens. A majority of the shops, restaurants, and businesses that my class visited in Carborough already embraced fair trade principles and human rights in their places of business. So in conclusion, I would urge the Board of Aldermen to endorse and honor the spirit of its citizenry in a proactive manner by approving the UDHR as a local guide in policy and practice for the 21st century. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Like the first item, I think this is something that a request that we would normally refer to our staff to get some reaction to, and so we will probably take up consideration of kind of what you're requesting at a future meeting.
I guess I wanted to comment on that because I'm not sure that if the request is that we adopt the Universal Declaration of Human Rights as kind of an ethical standard for the town, I'm not sure what the staff would tell us about.
Well, I guess, for example, we don't actually have that document in front of us. So,
right. So we might want to refer to of ourselves at a future meeting.
At a future meeting, yeah.
Well, I'm the mayor. I can't make motions.
Okay.
So you may wish to make a motion.
Randy just moved. I'll
just
second.
Moved it.
But what did you move? Because two ideas have been put out here.
We have a copy of the the Universal Declaration in front of us to
consider the question. Okay. All right. We will attempt to schedule a time forthcoming when we can have that in front of the board for project consideration.
It was moved and seconded, so
all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Matter passed unanimously, so we'll take up that at sometime a little later this spring.
That's really cool to hear your report, too, David, that the, you know, we always knew that we lived amongst good folks, and it's just nice to have that verified, so thank you.
All right.
Appeal the ordinance that we have.
We'll get to that. All right.
I'll wait till the hearing.
Okay. So are there any other matters that people wanted to speak on that are not on our printed agenda? If not, we'll move on to our consent agenda. Mr. Manager.
Item one is approval of minutes of the previous meeting of January 27th. Item two is a request to adopt a resolution setting a special meeting of the Board of Aldermen for February 25th, 2009.
Do you want to pull, does anybody want to pull item two off the consent agenda?
I've asked to pull item two off the consent agenda.
Okay.
Move adoption of item one.
Second. All right. The minutes have been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. Item two. Let me begin by saying I think this may be my fault. I had some communication with AWASA a while back about this. I was not able to find that communication by searching through my email to sort of corroborate the story I'm about to tell you. But I guess I thought I was being asked whether February 25th was a date that suited me. And I said that it did. But I didn't realize that I was supposed to communicate that question onward to all of y'all. So I apologize I gave AWASA the wrong impression about what our availability necessarily would be for February 25th. I've also been informed by the AWASA staff that if the February 25th date is not going to work for this board as a group, that they desire our input nonetheless and would work with us to schedule a time when we could talk to them and to the AWASA board about the issues involved. But that the intent would be that at least they would go ahead and meet with the county and Chapel Hill, who have adopted this particular time and date.
I'm already at that second meeting that evening, just so you all know, the Greenhouse Gases Commission meeting. That starts right at 8:30. So
that's the other issue. Is apparently there's something, an update on that and matter that's been scheduled for that night.
I can go to half of the meeting.
The first half or the second half?
The first half, not the second half.
Yeah, and I know I have another event that night that I'm in charge of that I can't miss.
I can go to no half.
No half.
No half.
No half. No
I'm
half.
I'm also eventing.
Okay.
That I can't miss.
So I will move that we ask AWASA to schedule a time to come before us at a regular meeting and make the presentation, get our reaction.
Okay.
But we can go to the first meeting if you want.
You can go any meeting.
Anyone
you want
can go.
Public meeting, I'm sure they would welcome. And in fact, because that greenhouse gas issue is going to be discussed, I think it would be good for those of us who can make that date to
do you know
go ahead and be there.
Do you know if it's going to be televised, Mark, or recorded?
I'm fairly certain it'll be recorded, but I don't think it's probably going to be not going to be televised.
Okay.
Recorded, but not televised.
I think, I mean, there are going to be minutes prepared by AWASA.
But in other words, we couldn't view it later, is what I'm saying.
We're actually exploring videoing the greenhouse gas emissions piece, because in case, you know, folks aren't there in the climate change committee.
Okay, so do I take it that the motion includes a request that they attempt to videotape the meeting?
Sure.
All right. It was moved, I guess, by Joel and seconded by Alderman Herrera. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
What's the motion?
The motion is to ask AWASA to schedule a time to come before us and to videotape meeting on the 25th.
Yeah.
The greenhouse gas.
Since I moved it, I'll support it.
Both of them.
Okay.
Whatever. All those in favor signify by saying aye. All those in favor of any part of the motion, aye. All
so
those
maybe
opposed.
I only have to go to half, huh?
The matter passes unanimously. Thank you very much. All right, a public hearing on two proposed town charter amendments, Mr. Mayor.
Are you confused?
I hate to ask, but I'm going to.
Yeah.
Are we to request the entire meeting to be videotaped?
I think the greenhouse gas part is the part that would be most helpful, since Owasso is going to be here for, going to come to us to present about the other issue. Okay. Public hearing on two proposed town charter amendments.
The board will receive public comment on two proposed town charter amendments and consider adoption of a resolution requesting the town's legislative delegation to introduce and support the amendments. There is no staff presentation, Mike, unless you have any comments about the two items that you drafted.
The charter amendments pertain to housing discrimination against people based on their sexual orientation. Is that a fair summary of what it?
It is. I want to talk about it a little bit, but I don't know if we want to hear from the public first. But I'm.
Well, we'll come to that in just a second. And I was going to say the other charter amendment relates to, and Dan, could you summarize it for us?
Yeah, to not restricting what we might broadly call sustainability measures through covenants that might restrict sustainability measures, whether it's photovoltaics or other items. And in regard to that, Mike, perhaps you could, since there may be citizens who saw the item that was in our packet, perhaps you could describe the change in the revised version that's before us.
Okay. Added, as a result of some comments that were suggested that were received, or some observations about the potential impact of it, and we amended it to add a couple of things. It's short enough. I can just read it if you want.
Mm-hmm. It might be better to explain it.
All right. Well, okay.
That'll be longer.
The first sentence, essentially, of it is, as Dan suggested, indicates that the board was be authorized to adopt an ordinance that would prohibit the enforcement of essentially restrictive covenants that would prohibit the use of solar collectors and other types of sustainability measures. That's the short version. Then we added a clause that says, so long as such installation is done by or on behalf of a person who otherwise has a property right to install such device where the device is proposed to be located. In other words, that language is designed to make it clear that the prohibition in the first part of the sentence is not intended to give somebody the right to put up one of these devices, a rain barrel, a solar collector, on property that they would not otherwise have the right to do it. In other words, I can't put up my solar collector on your house, for example. In other words, it's clearly designed to, and it's also the same would be true in multifamily or condominium situations, that this would be not intended to allow somebody, to grant somebody permission to put up a solar collector or a rain barrel on common property that they don't have a legal right to put it up in anyway. This is just basically designed to allow the board to adopt an ordinance to say that a restrictive covenant can't prohibit you from putting up one of these things where you'd otherwise be able to. So that's the first change that was made. And then the second change was made. We added a sentence to provide that the section is not intended to allow the ordinance to prohibit covenants that would or rules or regulations adopted by a property owners association that are designed to ensure that such devices are installed and maintained in a manner that they do not pose a risk to the health or safety of any person. So while the ordinance could prohibit covenants from proscribing the use of clotheslines, it would not prohibit a regulation that would say clotheslines have to be installed at a height of 5 feet to keep little kids from decapitating themselves.
Right.
That sort of thing. So those are the two changes that were made as a result of some early comments that we received.
Jackie.
I know there was some concern that people would be able to install large wind turbines in their backyards. And those are noisy. I'm not sure that we meant that. Do you have any comment on that, or would somebody be able to install a wind turbine in their backyard?
The way this presently reads, I would think that Again, you recognize that this is an authorization to grant the board the authority to adopt an ordinance. So,
right.
So it would I certainly read it as broad enough to allow the board to prohibit covenants that would prevent windmills or solar collectors or anything like that. Doesn't necessarily mean that's how the final version of the ordinance.
Okay,
would.
So we can still work out the details of it as
well. Yes, that's why we did this as a authorization rather than a specific ban, because it's just I'm not smart enough to think of everything.
Okay.
And neither are we. And that's the point I want to clarify, is that, you know, if we do implement, if we receive this authorization and we move forward to implement it, I think we would definitely be looking for the input both of citizens in general and also from the homeowners associations mm-hmm. on how to make it effective in achieving the goods that we're seeking without causing harm to neighborhoods okay. in their view. So I would see that as a collaboration in forging an ordinance in the future.
Okay, we're going to have at least three people signed up to speak on this issue. Did those of you from Sudbury Lane want to talk about this particular charter amendment?
Yes.
This was on this one?
Yes.
Okay, so if you don't mind, what we'll do is more or less split this discussion in two, and we'll proceed to recognize the three people who signed up on this particular issue, and then we'll discuss the second charter amendment a little bit later in the hearing, if that's acceptable. Mm-hmm. So the first person I have signed up on this issue is Richard Anstein. Did I read that right?
Yeah, Richard Anstein.
Come up, please, and stand over here at the podium, if you would, Mr. Anstein. Welcome.
Good evening. Thank you for hearing me. I received this on Friday via email, and there were a few things. Basically, I'm in disagreement with what has been written here, and I understand maybe there's some recent changes that I do not have. However, I don't disagree with, you know, everybody, let's go green, let's conserve, that's great. But I really have a problem starting with this amendment where it says, by ordinance, declare void and unenforceable any deed restriction, covenant, or similar binding agreement that runs with the land. Those are pretty serious legal terms mm-hmm. and amendments. And they affect why people buy, where they buy, and accept these agreements. There's attorneys, there's brokers in this room. They understand that. I have a real problem with the town just declaring that they're void and unenforceable, and that the agreements I bought my house under just get tossed out the window, that are my right. Another problem I have with it is that it says, well, there's a few things. One is, it's not clear at all as to ownership. It relates to ownership of a property. But there's a big difference between a detached home, a townhouse community, and condos. If I'm in a condo, can I go ahead and put my solar collector up in the driveway? Another part of this is what it says is, such ordinance may also provide that a property owner may not be denied permission to install any such device by any entity granted the power or right in any deed restriction, covenant, or similar binding agreement. To me, this just says the town of Carrboro is trying to go way over the top and taking away rights that were certainly in place when I bought my property and other people brought their property. And then in addition to that, any person aggrieved by a violation of an ordinance adopted under this section may apply to a court of competent jurisdiction for equitable relief against the enforcement of any deed restriction, covenant, or similar binding agreement that is prohibited by such ordinance, and the court may award cost and reasonable attorney's fees to the prevailing party. Basically, you're going to defend somebody that's coming after my right when I bought my property for my deed and covenant restrictions. You know, it runs with the land. You can get different definitions, but it's a promise for current and all future owners. And I do not think the council, I realize by law you can make this, you can send it to the General Assembly and debate will take place there, but it is awful broad. And what I have a question for the council is, I look back in the council minutes, and granted, since I just got this notice on Friday and I've been busy over the holiday weekend, I didn't see any place in the minutes. How or when did this come up? Is that something I can get an answer to?
I'll address that in a few minutes.
Okay. All right. Very good. The other comments I have to be made about it is I want to make sure people understand we're for green and sustainability. I do represent, I'm not here representing necessarily, but I am involved with the Homeowners Association. I am a licensed broker. Some of the things I've seen being on homeowners associations and other things are the requests that people come up with. The Architectural Control Committee and the board of most homeowners associations are there to provide for appreciation and to just basically keep things in check with the neighborhood. And in Carrboro, I think most all homeowners associations are fairly lax. They don't follow the letter of the covenants. They let people do things that realistically aren't there. My point here is, and I will cut it short, is that the way this is written and the way I'm writing it, most of you probably saw my email or read it, is that it has no control over what a person can do in their backyard or in their front yard. It specifically says, I can put up a fence to protect my garden. We don't allow fences in most front yards in most of the communities. Does that mean I can let my 12-year-old put up a chicken wire fence 2 feet tall and say it's to keep the rabbits out of my garden? Can I put steel barrels all over my front yard to collect water? The windmill is one I never thought about. Makes sense, but are we going to be allowed to put those up in our driveway? I just think in general that something like this needs to be worked out between homeowners associations and the people that they represent. Homeowners have a right to the appreciation of their property, and to have a neighbor do something very unsightly or ridiculous, if you will, started in their front yard and left, could certainly affect property values. And I just think there's certainly a better approach and a better way to go about addressing these issues. I don't think anybody's against, you know, saving the environment and being green. I think we just need to do it in a manner that is not just blatantly striking down amendment rights of covenants and that, and saying we're just going to forget all about them. That is all I have to say. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Richard.
Thank you.
All right. Fran, I'll address your question, Mr. Anstein, in just a minute, but Fran Allegri.
Thank you for hearing me also this evening.
I have been living in Carrboro for 14 years, and I saw this request today for the first time. I have 4 points that I'd like to make and suggest some alternatives. I am against approving of giving the council authority to put through an ordinance of this type. One of the reasons that I think particularly affects me at this point is that the community needs more time to address this. As Richard was saying, I think this is a matter for homeowners associations to deal with if that appears to be an obstacle to instituting sustainability or green efforts. Second, it introduces a litigious approach to solving problems or issues in addressing a covenants which doesn't exist, at least in my neighborhood. Those enforcements and those and instructions are not going to court in most cases, and this definitely opens that up for neighbors to pit themselves against each other. It also, third, strips away protections guaranteed to me when I bought my home, and that breaks a trust that I don't think most homeowners would accept. So a fourth point is that the wording in this, even the authorization, is so open-ended, it's anything goes, and it's one-sided and pretty heavy-handed for a solution to something as positive as green and sustainability issues are. I think better alternatives would be for the council to bring homeowner representatives together, homeowners association representatives together, for a workshop perhaps on how to word an amendment to their covenants that might encourage people to adopt green and sustainability efforts. They could draft, the council could draft language for homeowners association boards to consider in the future or to make changes, and they could also look for other options other than an ordinance that strikes down long-standing and accepted practices and agreements.
Thank you, Ms. Allegri. And Robert Kirshner.
I appreciate it. I'm Robert Kirshner. I live here in Carrboro also, and for full disclosure, I am a board member of my homeowners association. I have I was quite shocked by this amendment also, and why I talk, I'm going to try to put some general information out there so that, you know, you can all, I don't know if this, how clear this is. How do I adjust this? Or is it readable? I can't.
It's not.
No.
It's your eye.
Thank you. anyway, I'm doing that. I've had tried to have some open discussion also about this. Okay, and I have I don't know how many of you have received a copy of a proposed changes to the amendment that you have provided, but I'll give you another copy of when I drafted.
Thanks, Rob.
I know we're all trying to be part of a change generation now. However, I did catch Bill Clinton's speech not too long ago and earnestly listened to the being part of the how generation and how we make changes, appropriate changes, and so forth. And I guess I'll present this for the record. And Mike, I don't know if you want or have
sure.
seen it. Or,
I don't think so.
I will present it and just to put it on the board there just for a minute there as I talk here. I quite honestly was quite taken back by the oops.
Just read it.
Does that help?
Not really. Go ahead, though, Robert.
Okay.
Tell us like it is.
Like it is, it's quite honestly, when I first heard about this, I actually felt pretty disenfranchised. I was insulted. I think what was presented here actually demonizes homeowners associations and board members who really work hard to represent their communities. There is a great appreciation for what you're attempting to do here, but what you've done is kind of going around it the wrong way and in an insulting and a draconian way, which is not the Carborough way. And I know it's typically not your way, but that's how it's coming across. Homeowners associations, let's see if this helps any. I hope that's readable, but I read what was presented there, and I took the approach of, I really didn't agree with it, I was insulted by it, but all right, well, how do we make this work? So I presented, I tried presenting some different language here that could make it work, and taking recognizing that community associations do have a right to govern themselves. People do have a right to govern themselves. It's corporate law. What you want to do is entice, if you want to make the change you want to make is to entice them to look at themselves and make appropriate amendments and allow them the opportunity to make the appropriate changes instead of just forcing an idea. Carborough is very well known for its diversity. It's known that even though the governance of this board is pretty much on a liberal basis, the town of Carborough is made up of a wide variety of political views and so forth, from the very, very extreme liberal to the almost very conservative. And I was actually, as I was trying to do some of my research here, came across a blog where somebody was requesting information from out of town, wanting to move to Carborough and asking what neighborhoods to move into, and admitting that as a spouse I'm very liberal, but my husband's very conservative, and what community is what I would fit into. And the feedback was Carborough is very diverse and that both sides could very easily blend in and feel comfortable living side by side with their neighbors who may be on one extreme or the other. And that's part of the makeup of Carborough. And it's a makeup of their communities. They can find a community that they can fit into because of the diversity of community. And what this language did is it's taken away the rights of the communities to govern themselves. What I have here is I will try to put out here some of the, and it's large, and I will try to see if I can. I was trying to hoping that maybe some people out in the viewing land there could see some of the proposals that I came up with. But what I tried to present here was recognizing that communities have a right the subject that we're trying to address here, and what you're trying to address there is so vast, so complicated when it's dealing with the property rights of both individuals, the property rights of community associations, both being in subdivisions or townhome or condominiums. It's so vast that I don't think we can quickly just throw something together. It's really going to take a little bit more study. I do want to point out, I was taken back by the action of this, as I don't believe there was, first of all, I don't think the public hearing actually was given enough time. I think typically with an amendment, there should be at least a, I think it was supposed to be at least a 10-day notice in the paper, and I'm not sure that was there. I certainly didn't get notice until Friday at the earliest. There has been no outreach to communities. There's, you know, to get input, to review some of the circumstances that even I'm not an expert enough. I have my personal experiences, and I have relationships with outside people and property managers, so I've heard some of the other stories, both on from the board side and from homeowner sides. But I don't have all that expertise. I think it really needs to be an outreach and to get valid input and a valid approach to this thing. And again, being part of that how approach, I once again brainstorm and put some ideas together here, and I'm almost at this point proposing that we table this amendment at this time. We establish a commission of, I threw it out there as, you know, a couple of citizens and some people that, making sure that some people are board members on here. And I asked, you know, if the possibility, if there's a property manager who will do this pro bono, maybe not, but maybe if there's a citizen who is a property manager, be willing to do, you know, fill both rows, if we have some sort of legal access with the task of inviting in homeowners associations and members of homeowners associations and community members to review this issue and see if there's a better way of encouraging and promoting the change, helping associations figure out how to make amendments to their documents if there's things out there that we would recommend changing. More of, let's take a sugar approach to this and let's make real change, sustainable change. And to report back to you with a recommendation of this, we're making progress and people are real receptive to this, or they're not, and here's what we recommend the next step be. I hope I'm making sense on some of this here. I really, really was disappointed in being almost insulted in the way this was presented. And I have often offered to talk to you several times before. I know these subjects have come up in general conversation at meetings and stuff, and I have offered to meet with you all and present ideas on there, and I have yet to been outreached to. I think those are some of my basic meanings there, and as I said, I hope those were clear enough for the viewing audience that they could see some of the points there, but I don't think it's fair to demonize homeowners associations. They're there for a reason. It's a contractual agreement that we have with our community members for how we operate. We operate as a representative democracy. It's a contractual agreement that the community associations have with the town in exchange for services or reducing of services that the town provides. And I believe your action actually is a breach of our contract. So, thank you.
Very, very cogent comments, Bob. Thank you.
All right. That was the last person I had signed up to speak on that issue. Is there anybody else who wants to speak at this time about that? Come up, please.
Thank you for having me speak. My name is Joy Harris, and I'm a property manager for homeowners associations in Carrboro and Chapel Hill and Durham. And I agree with them 100%. It's hard enough to enforce what the covenants for each property are as they are right now because they're so gray. If we throw this into the curveball, my questions would be, you know, in a townhome community where you may have seven homes in a building and the guy in the middle wants to put a solar panel up on a common area, who's responsible for that panel if he moves, if it damages, if it leaks? You know, there's so many things that, you know, are gray areas that this makes even grayer or more difficult to manage as any community, either the board, the management companies, and the aesthetics part would become a reason why people move into communities. It's a choice of living, and I think if people want to have those other choices where they want to have green living, then either develop new communities that are built for such a purpose, or they should go to a place where the deed restrictions aren't already there restricting those type of things. There's a lot of communities that I manage that a clothesline wouldn't work because there's no backyard, literally, that's a drop-off. So how would you know, you make it okay for some people, but then you wouldn't be able to do it for others. So I agree with them that it would be nice to have managers, community boards, and owners come to talk to you about if this is really feasible or not. Thank you.
All right, thanks. I want to just briefly address the question that Richard Anstein raised about how this came up, and I think the answer is that there was one, there's a particular neighborhood in town where somebody was, it was a single family home homeowner who wanted to put up a clothesline in their backyard and were told by the local by their homeowners association that no, that was prohibited by covenants, and I think they had some internal discussions within the neighborhood about the problem and could not get the homeowners association to agree to any kind of change or exception or what have you in the covenants, and they requested that we do what we could to assist in making it easier for people to adopt these kind of sustainability measures for the future for some existing neighborhoods. Is that a fair summary of how we kind of got here, was looking at that issue? Well,
I'll try to be brief.
Try.
With all due respect for the individual within this home community, there are several ways of due process that he can continue to pursue this, and if he has the support of his neighbors within the community, they can continue to petition the board to alter their line of thought. He can also run to be to get on the board and be part of the change as well. That's an opportunity that he has. They are elected officers. Okay. And directors, you know, so they have multiple different ways of approaching the and pursuing this. He also has a method of appeal through the courts as well, you know, so it's
well, I don't want to get into
so being can
I don't want to get into an argument
so
with
attacking all homeowners associations because of one person who's disgruntled with their association is unfair and
well, I don't want to get into too much of an argument with you about that point, but I think that's not necessarily what you're saying is not necessarily true, or it's not necessarily correct that it's as simple as convincing the board of the association to change their mind about the issue. Because
what I am saying
the problem is that it's an agreement among all of the unit owners, and so the level of consensus that's necessary. I mean, it depends on the particular situation, and I'm not an expert in this area of law, but that, you know, you in some cases to change some of these rules requires a level of consensus through the neighborhood that is almost impossible to achieve.
Which
that,
is
that
the,
you get to a point where if one person objects to doing away with a particular rule, then you haven't achieved the level of consent. You haven't achieved.
They are aware of those rules when they purchase into that property. That
well, that may
that
be, but
right
that doesn't. Well, that may be. That may be, Robert.
Into that,
and,
all right,
and that
into that property.
That may be, but let me say this.
And there's a due process for this.
Thank you. However, let me point out that the United States Congress was faced with exactly this same type of issue in 1978, and they actually, as early as 30 years ago, made the wise decision that yes, there are certain kinds of covenants that may be private agreements between private individuals about the way that real estate may be used, but that our need as a nation to be more independent of foreign energy sources, you know, is such a compelling public purpose and public need that it trumped those private agreements, and that even in certain situations where it may have been, you know, willingly an agreement willingly entered into and knowledge, you know, knowingly entered into by two parties, that if what it was doing was making us more dependent on foreign sources of energy, that that agreement should be set aside by law. And I think what we're trying to do here is not to have people put windmills up in the middle of a condominium driveway, but instead to say that in some cases. And the specific terms of it aren't laid out here yet. The idea would be that we would later decide that if we were granted this authority, that that in some cases some of the restrictions that were adopted 5 and 10 and 20 years ago may not really have taken into consideration the situation that we find ourselves in as a nation and a planet, and that new sets of rules may need new community priorities, new national and international priorities may compel us to essentially trump some of those private agreements. Now, having said that, having made that argument, let me clarify something. Mr. Attorney, the issue was raised about whether in a townhouse setting, whether this proposal would make it so that a homeowner in a townhome would have the right to put up a solar panel in a common area that was owned by the homeowners association or owned by all the people collectively. I don't read it to allow anything like that.
No, I think that was the reason that first of the two changes or amendments after the initial draft was added. I think that kind of point was raised by someone, and so the language that says, you know, so long as such installation is done by or on behalf of a person who otherwise has a property right to install such device where the device is proposed to be located. In other words, you couldn't. The bottom line is you have to have a property right to put something there in the first place.
Right.
If you haven't got that right today, this isn't giving you that right.
Okay. So, for example, in a townhouse setting, a typical situation with a townhouse, if you owned a townhouse, you would own the dwelling unit you live in. You own a small amount of land that's underneath that dwelling unit, and sometimes, not necessarily, but sometimes you would own a little bit of land immediately behind your unit and immediately in front of your
that's
unit.
Great.
And so the way that that's written, the townhouse owner might be allowed to place a rain barrel on his or her own property if they've got some immediately in front of or behind their unit.
I mean, it's the same thing as you couldn't, in those homeowners, those typical collective living situations, townhomes and economies, you can't. If you wanted to put a huge satellite dish, you can't just go out and put it on the common property. I mean, because you don't have the property right to do that. It's not your land. It's
right.
Common owned land any more than you could put your satellite dish on your neighbor's condominium property. And that's
right.
So this is making fairly, I think, now explicitly clear that the intent of this authorization would not be to allow the Board of Aldermen to say, well, you could do that which you now can't do.
Okay. Now let me if I may just run with this ball for just a minute longer. The it seems to me my understanding of condominium law in North Carolina that as this is written, it would mostly do almost no good for anybody who owned a condominium as opposed to a townhome. And the point I'm getting at is that in a condominium situation, you do have some small undivided interest in the general real estate, all of the land that the condominium stands on, but you don't have a right to put rain barrels or anything else for the most part on the common area. And really what you own is just the airspace and the part of the building that's in your airspace that's associated with your unit. What I'm trying to get at is,
that's correct.
I don't think as a condominium owner that I really own the roof of the building that I live in. The
actually,
roof. Well, no, I don't think you do. The responsibility for that roof is with the homeowners association, and if you read condominium documents, it really lays it out in a way that says that you really own only what is defined as the internal space, either from the studs inward or else from the sheetrock inward in your unit. What I'm trying to get at by saying that is I don't think it's really logically possible, to my way of thinking, to have this type of rule apply in the condominium setting virtually at all. Because you don't really own the exterior of your building to make any modifications to it in a condominium setting.
I would agree with that.
Mm-hmm. So I think one thing that we could do, and perhaps if we're going to move forward with this proposal, we ought to do is just go ahead and explicitly state that this does not apply to the condominium setting so that we don't have to get embroiled in an argument about about that issue when, in fact, the condominium setting is almost entirely irrelevant. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes, I certainly.
Okay, I just wanted to kind of get that
certainly
out.
Do that for clarification.
The situation where you own an individual piece of land, as in a single-family subdivision or in a townhome situation, seems to me to be fundamentally pretty different. Dan, you want to?
Yeah, my only comment is at this point is that I think it's important to be clear that a lot of the concerns that the three speakers raised are important ones that if we craft an ordinance, we would need to address in that ordinance. And I think a process perhaps similar to the one that Bob suggested, or at least certainly in one including the kinds of people he suggested, would be important to make sure that we get the language right.
Jackie.
And I also just want to make clear that this evening what we're doing is simply moving ahead to ask for the legislation that would enable us to have such an ordinance. Tonight we're not looking at passing such an ordinance. We're simply moving forward with our legislative delegation asking that we have the enabling legislation to do this. Isn't that right? Yeah,
that's what
there would be a whole nother public hearing over that if we get that enabling legislation. So this is like step minus two.
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
And maybe staff doesn't know this, but do we have any idea what percentage of Carrboro homeowners belong to homeowner associations? I'm sure that data may not be available. No,
it's pretty high.
It's pretty high because what you see in early Carrboro, there are no homeowners associations, and you see the development and the history of homeowners associations began right after World War II with the GI Bill and the federal government, providing loans to service people, and so taking advantage of the both boom of people going to college, getting jobs, the expansion of the United States economy, you see the development of homeowners association. And it has been, since the 50s, a standard method of developing property in subdivisions. Mm-hmm. Now, there have been issues with some of the covenants that are contained in some of those developments from the 50s, and some struck down by the Supreme Court for obvious reasons. But it's pretty much the standard now. Now, the question is the developer at the very onset decides to have these covenants, because I don't think it's required that you have to have a homeowners association when you develop property, is it?
Well, except if you have the answer would be no, but it is certainly induced by a requirement that we have in our ordinance that, first of all, requires common open space.
Right.
And if you have common open space, somebody has to maintain it, and your choices are either dedicating it to the town if the town wants it, which is typically not the case. So effectively, right, everybody has to have a homeowners association to maintain the common open space.
And stormwater management and
stormwater
issues.
Management. Right.
You know, you get into this, it's sort of difficult to do any kind of large-scale real estate development at this point without them.
Right, right.
That doesn't mean they have to have covenants of this kind in
right.
either, or that they have to have architectural right. review, but once they set up the homeowners association, they typically have both.
Right.
Governances are also reviewed by the town attorney typically in these developments, at least in the recent ones have been, according to the
We do review the covenants but not for these purposes. In other words, we never get into whether they allow clotheslines or don't allow clotheslines or solar collectors or that sort of thing. I mean, our review has to do with ensuring that they are established in such a way that the objectives of the ordinance can be achieved, whether that be basically to maintain the common property. That's the principal thing that we look at, which would include now, you know, the
Stormwater
controls mm-hmm. and other common facilities. That's the nature of what we're, or that there are in some cases affordable housing provisions, but we don't look at what kind of specific covenants they have about these types of matters.
I'd like to suggest that since there's a good chance that this will come to public hearing, at which time we can have another full-blown discussion and structure how we want that public hearing discussion to go, that we move towards moving forward with this to see if we can get the enabling legislation, which may or may not be a moot point.
Yes, sir. Oh, no, but I'm sorry, Randy was next.
I just wanted to say that I really appreciated the comments of the speakers, and I'm interested in what Fran and Rob had to say regarding the need for, you know, more community input and involvement with homeowners associations, and you know, should we move forth on the enabling legislation and the authority to adopt the ordinance. I would like to see us have as part of the framework, you know, a community involvement in a really consistent manner.
John.
Briefly, I just want to say that thank you for the speakers who came in and brought up their issues, and I understand their concerns. This is just the beginning of a process. It's a legislative process. No rights have been taken away from no one. We live in a very conservative state with a very conservative legislature. You have to first get approved, go through that filter, and where all those issues, believe me, will be addressed. I do love in there that the legislature, and I can tell you the Realtors Association has one of the most effective lobbying groups in the state of North Carolina, and property owners and the legislators themselves. I mean, this is something that it gets depicted word by word and have to go through committees, through hearings, and if ever it comes out of there, they will come back to us, and we have to establish a process by which everybody will be heard, and an ordinance might get proposed. So it's not a done deal. It's not the end of the world. It's just an approach to promote the values of Carrboro. And I can understand how at face value might look threatening, like, oh, my God, everybody's going to start putting windmills in the driveways and clotheslines in front of my house. But I don't think that's what's going to happen, or that's what the intent is. We're trying to do the right thing, and I just ask you for your patience and open-mindedness and trust the system that, I mean, there is another opportunity also to participate over there as well as here. So there's plenty of citizen input and power that you have to affect what gets written at the end. So I appreciate your input.
If it's really brief and you can shout it out.
It's really brief. All I would like to say is if one person brought this to be and you're going to act on it without any input from homeowners associations, and there will be an outcry, and this has been looked at by other lawyers. I cannot practice law, but I think it would just be pertinent in the town of Carrboro, and I would like to think that we could address it, come up with something better right off the get-go, put something as what you have in writing forward. Even though it's a preliminary step, it's saying we want to get the approval to go forward. It would just seem so much more intelligent.
Now, do we need a motion on these items to forward them to the legislators? Or
I think that's appropriate.
There's a resolution that addresses both.
Could we have the phrase that would be very, I'm sorry.
Yes, ma'am.
Could we have the phrase that would very obviously remove condominium associations from it, as Mark was saying, so we can just kind of get past
that? We had something to clarify that doesn't apply to condominium.
Yeah. Yes, we can do that.
And okay. I think Lydia was going to suggest a change to the discrimination, anti-discrimination.
Oh, yeah, well, we're not done. We haven't gotten to that subject yet. We're not exempting townhomes at this point, or that's not, no one's discussed that possibility. The other question I have, and I don't want to belabor this point, but it seems to me that if I recall this phrase correctly, that maybe it would be good to add the term equitable servitude into the list of types of restrictions. I realize it already says or similar binding agreements, but the property professor can correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, there could be an argument that an equitable servitude is not that similar to a covenant in the sense that it's equitable rather than legal. So
this is Robert's.
Well, I know, but it's okay. But he mimicked the
where I got the, I mean, I got the language from the sort of a combination of those two bills that Alderman Coleman had sent to me. That particular phraseology, I think, is in both of those bills. One that got it enacted, the one that prevents covenants from dealing with solar collectors, the state law. I mean, you've tested my property skills on equitable
servitude. I'm pushing my own boundaries.
But
the professor is
not sure what an equitable servitude is, but we can add that language if you want.
Does that seem logical?
I think so.
Yeah.
It does? Okay.
Well, certain kinds of property agreements are fail to actually meet the technical definition of covenant, and so the courts call them equitable servitudes and
that
still
goes
enforce
back
them in
32 years, and that's about 30. Let's not go there.
I understood this for about 15 minutes before the bar exam. So anyway,
okay.
Are we ready to move on to the other one?
Do we have just one unified resolution for these two items?
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Okay. So let's move on to the other item. Well, do you have other changes to this?
No, but I have a question about what you just said, because that means that the resolution is for both items together. Is,
mm-hmm.
is that clear?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Well, I'm not comfortable with this part of it at this point. I feel
okay.
like
can we
so
have, let's have a let me suggest then that we just split the motion and have a motion to
I'd like to move that for the approval of the resolution with the attorney's amendment
with the clarification about condominiums
yes.
not being
what
included in the use of the term equitable servitude.
All right,
it's been moved and seconded for that. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
I will take that as direction to forward this to the
yes
delegation.
Yeah. The vote was 5-2, and Hayden O'Donnell and Brown in the negative. Okay. Now on to the second item. I know this is taking a while, folks, and I know a number of you are here for a later item, but we'll get there soon. All right.
Okay, on to the less controversial bill. This is a town charter amendment dealing with housing discrimination, and we had discussed in this hearing is to discuss adding the classifications of sexual orientation, gender identification, or gender expression to our housing discrimination clause. And upon looking at it more closely, it occurred to me that what it's doing in this housing discrimination statement is kind of identifying different groups that are found in the Fair Housing Act. But the Fair Housing Act has been updated a little bit since this language was updated in our charter. For example, our charter says race, color, religion, sex, or national origin. The Fair Housing Act also includes now handicap and familial status. So it's my suggestion that rather than not have a totally inclusive list for housing discrimination, we also add on those two groups in addition to sexual orientation, gender identification, gender expression that already we are asking to have on.
So which two groups? I'm sorry.
Pardon me?
Which two groups do you
want to have? Under fair housing is handicap and familial status.
Okay.
Yeah.
So whether you're divorced or married.
Yeah. Or you have kids or whatever, right?
Can I ask a question? Does this apply to group homes? That is, because, you know, some, you know, does it apply to group homes?
You can't discriminate against group homes.
I'm just making, I mean, I'm asking, does this apply to group homes?
Oh, I see.
Well, I think the addition of the language or handicap would make a discrimination based upon handicap status. So it doesn't necessarily, I mean, it doesn't specifically or uniquely apply to group homes. In other words, but it would, I suppose it wouldn't prohibit discrimination that's based upon the fact that somebody didn't want, you know, eight tenants in a house, irrespective of whether they were handicapped or college students or just whatever. So it doesn't necessarily prohibit exclusion of group homes, but the addition of the word language handicap would add a new category that would be covered by the ordinance should the ordinance get amended to include it. This, again, is authorization, not an ordinance.
Right. And would handicap be defined as there's a federal standard, federal definition, or is there a...
I think the language that Lily read is coming from the Federal Fair Housing Act, which does have a definition of handicap.
Okay.
Sure. I think we would just, probably in the ordinance, we would just pick up that definition, whatever that is. I know that's not the current language that's used, but that that is the definition in the federal law.
Okay.
Before we pass this, I want to make sure that the typo is corrected in the sentence that says, however, ordinance is adopted shall not apply to the, and it should say rental.
It says rental.
Otherwise, it could be kind of a
renal
sophomoric kind of joke or something.
Yes.
You know.
Making
okay.
sure kidneys
appreciate
are
that.
All in shape.
All right. I don't have anybody signed up to speak on this aspect of the charter, proposed charter amendments. Is there anybody who wanted to speak? Okay, hearing none.
Move the item as corrected by Lydia and Kathy.
Okay.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All the as amended twice. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. Matter passes unanimously.
Mark, may I say something?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, you can anyway, but I just think it's really interesting and really neat that of these two amendments, the one that brought people out of the woodwork and the one that had the most controversy had to do with clotheslines and not orientation. And I think that really says something about how we've changed and evolved as a community over the past 20 years. I think that's...
And how we haven't.
And how... Well, yeah, but I just think that's kind of worth marking.
I think it is. You're right.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jackie. All right. Item E1.
This is an application for a monument on town property, and the purpose of this item is for the board to consider an application for a monument located on town property. George Size, our public works director.
Isn't that sweet?
That's so sweet.
Good evening. I just wanted to briefly highlight a few things about this item. The applicant, Beverly Dickinson, who is here tonight, has submitted the application in honor of her mother, Mary Louise Morgan. Mrs. Morgan was a longtime resident of Carrboro with family ties deeply rooted in the town. There is more information about Mrs. Morgan and reasons for the request in the application. Mrs. Dickinson is requesting that a red maple tree be planted and a flat and gravestone installed nearby. She will provide the tree and stone. The stone will be on the order of approximately 12 inches by 18 inches, engraved with pertinent dates and perhaps a short phrase. The town will be responsible for planting and maintenance of the tree, and the proposed site is on the north side of the fire station along Fidelity Street, and there is an aerial photo included in your packet. Your packet also includes the policy for monuments located on town property. Section 4 contains the guidelines for review of proposal for monuments. Public Works and the Fire Department have reviewed the request and believe that the site is appropriate for the tree planting and stone nameplate, and town staff recommends the board consider Mrs. Dickinson's application.
I would like to, with pleasure, move move that we approve this.
Second that.
Yeah, you know, talk about.
Should we ask if
the applicant would like to?
Oh, I'm sorry.
I don't know. Did you all have a comment or anything?
This is Dickinson. Did you have a comment or anything?
Not really. My mother just passed away about 4 months ago, and she was 88, would have been 89 in 3 days, and she had lived her entire life here in Carlisle. And so many times we've heard her tell people that she lived in the best community in the entire country. And she just enjoyed so much. She was actually born in a house that's right across from the town hall. And from her backyard, she could hear the music festivals, the 4th of July celebrations, enjoy the Christmas tree and caroling over here. Could tell you how much turnout there was for voters on voting day, for town hall meetings. Just, she loved the fact that Carlisle as a little town was alive. And I think she would be very pleased to see that.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, we're talking about trying to make Carlisle more green. I don't know that anybody has done more than the Morgan and Dickinson families to make Carlisle and Chapel Hill, for that matter, a greener, literally greener place to live. So.
Mark.
Yes, ma'am.
I just wanted to thank the Dickinsons. I was so touched reading the application, and I just think it's really what Carlisle is all about. So, thank you.
All right, I take that as a motion and a second.
Yeah.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, mm-hmm. Pass unanimously.
That's your mom had a clothes line.
Yes, she did.
They don't have it, a homeowners association in our neighborhood. Okay, yes, ma'am.
Is the application online?
It is. Yes, ma'am. It is at townofcarborough.org, and if you click on town government, and then go to agendas, and go to this date, you can take a look at it. Yes, ma'am. All right. Revolving loan fund request from Cycle 9, Mr. Manager.
The purpose of this item is for the board to consider a loan request from Melise and Morgan Gidding, owner-operators of Cycle 9, located at 601 West Main Street. And James Harris is here to provide background for the board. James?
Tonight, I actually have three loan presentations for you, but before I go forward with the presentations on the individual loans, I'd like to share some basic information about the revolving loan fund to you. First of all, we have seven active loans with a collective loan balance of principal balance of $148,000. That balance will be paid back into the loan fund along with its interest to continue the fund. We also currently have about $356,000 that's available to make loans to individuals. If all three of these loans are approved, the balance in the loan fund would be $167,928. So we wouldn't be broke.
Okay.
Okay. The first loan.
May I ask you a question, please?
Yes.
How much of that money that's available comes from property taxpayers?
None.
Okay. Could you say that again?
None of the money in this fund came from property taxpayers.
Okay. And what was the original sum of the loan from which we've grown this program?
$150,000, and that was 1986, so it's been a long time.
Pretty good economic development program, I would say. Thank you.
Thanks, Sam. The first loan that we have is under consideration of Cycle 9. And the loan applicants are Elise and Morgan Giddings. Would you all stand up, please? I'd like to introduce the people who are applying so that everybody will know who they are. The business is located at 601 D West Main Street. That's the old Bass Knight building. So we're having people move into that building, and it's bringing more economic development to that end of town. You may have noticed that there's a restaurant planning to come there as well.
A restaurant or a coffee shop?
Coffee shop, and they're going to serve sandwiches, I believe.
Okay. And art, I heard, too.
Yes, that's correct.
Did you see the looking glass?
They are
looking glass. Oh, is it?
Not
oh,
no.
Okay, sorry.
Yes. Sorry to get you. I'm sorry, I threw you off.
We'll have another meeting about that. Sorry.
All right. Cycle Now was created to promote transportation bicycle products in our community. They currently sell
oversized bikes, cargo bikes, folding bikes, utility bikes for transportation. You may have seen some of these long bikes riding around town. They requested a loan in the amount of $68,000 for 7 years at an interest rate of 3%. The business will create 8 jobs. They were currently at White Cross, and they moved into town, so they'll retain those jobs, and that'll be excellent for the town of Carrboro. The collateral for the loan will be real estate, any inventory purchased with the loan proceeds, and personal guarantees of the owners. So that's the presentation on that one.
Okay, are there any questions on this particular application? If not, is there a motion on it?
So
second.
Moved and seconded for approval. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. Good luck.
The second loan for consideration is the Fringe, doing business as the Beehive. This is an established business in the town of Carrboro, and they are requesting money to do an expansion in their current location. They're asking $50,000 at a rate of 3% for 8 years. The collateral for the loan will be real estate, any equipment purchased with the loan proceeds, and personal guarantees. And the applicant is here, Diane Coynstein.
All right.
And mostly she's going to use that money to purchase equipment to expand that business. And we'll take that as collateral, as well as her real estate.
And the redesign, the taking the walls out, is that covered by the loan also?
Yes, it is.
So, and I have so they're expanding the space they have available for
the more chairs,
the stylists.
Right.
Cool.
All right.
Second.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded to approve. All those in favor signify saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Yes, ma'am.
Do you know when the expansion will be completed?
Pretty close.
Oh, great. Great.
I'm going to take
it
out.
All right. Okay. And the original ornament.
The original ornament. Casey Schlatter is here. She's an existing business in the Carmel Mall, and she is a bead and retail business. She's been in business for quite a while now, and she's asking for a loan of $70,000 for 6 years at 3% interest. She will retain, nine jobs in her business after this expansion.
Wow.
And I have some photos of her shop. It's a very nice shop. I'm an asset to the town. The collateral for this loan will be the business inventory and her personal guarantee. There's no real estate attached to this.
James,
could,
I have a question.
Oh. Could you comment on the discussion at ESC about the collateral and, you know, why it was, I mean, it's in the memo, but maybe you could just reiterate why that was seen as sufficient in this case.
I'll have to go back and look. There was some conversation at the loan review board about this loan and the lack of the kind of collateral that we'd like to have. But because she's been there and from recommendations from the current property manager down at Carmel, the loan review board felt very strongly about supporting this loan. And both Alderman Heyman O'Daniel, Donald, and
I'm
Coleman
Daniel.
Were present at that meeting. I'll get it right. I was listening to all this conversation tonight.
Well, you know, what we heard was the incredible strength of this business, and Nathan, who was until, I guess, this month part of the ESC, I guess you could say testified to what a great tenant and business original ornament has been.
And he recused himself.
He did recuse himself, right. Yes.
And I would just say to board members that I have used the business by myself to make people Christmas presents and Hanukkah presents. My mother-in-law has taken both her granddaughters there to make beads and bracelets and necklaces, and my daughter is and has been for a number of months harassing me to go back, and we just haven't had a free Saturday. So, and I've known I don't know her personally, but I've known the business as long as I've lived in Carrboro, and it's always full. So,
what
I just want to share also that, you know, I've been making beads since San Francisco, 1973, so I will tell you that I use the bead store all the time, and there's one aspect, Dan's laughing, but there's one aspect of the original ornament people don't think about, and that's when you go in and you watch people at work gathering their beads and making their ornaments, the therapy that goes on. So it gives back to Carrboro in very helpful ways.
I just had a quick question about the application.
Yes.
It says here that the applicant will purchase a life insurance policy naming the town of Carrboro as beneficiary. Is that, have we done that before?
Yes, we have.
And is that policy owned by the town?
They'll name the town as insurance.
Usually has my name.
It doesn't mean much, but if something were to happen, it would be a way to have the loan paid back.
It might mean more if it were owned by the town. That's my only question. In other words, it's owned by her naming the beneficiary as the town. That's all I'm getting at.
I think we can figure out how to do that.
We take a look at that for the future.
But typically, though, when people loan money, this is for my pre Secretary of State work, working for self-help. The part of the loan contract agreement is that the borrower maintains the insurance policy, or that's considered a part of the default. And typically, the beneficiary is the lender. So they'll actually own the policy because the person who has the policy on their life typically pays for the policy, but the beneficiary is the town and not, say, a relative or something like that.
Well, no, I don't.
No,
want
we don't
to
want
to
know.
This is right. What you know.
Right. But our attorney has done that in the past. So,
okay. All right.
Second.
All right. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. Matter passed unanimously. Thanks very much. All right. Continued discussion of a town code amendment to regulate the application of fertilizer to 2 acres or more of land. Mr. Manager, do you have a presentation on this?
Randy Dodd, our environmental planner, did have an update from the board based on the changes that were made since this was last before you all.
Okay.
So it's your pleasure as to whether you want that or not.
Well, come on up, Randy.
So I just wanted to real quickly make sure that all the folks who may be hearing this for the first time get some, both here in the room and at home, if there's anyone watching, as well as you all, refresh our memory on how we've got to where we are tonight, and then give you an update on what we've done since we last met and discussed this. Back in May of 2008, we first brought this to your attention, and this was proposed as a town code amendment, so it only applies within the municipal limits. And the primary driver here is our stormwater permit, MPDS Phase 2.
Let me ask you one clarifying thing about that.
So you're saying within the town limits. In other words, for folks who are in our extraterritorial jurisdiction or in our annexation area but who are not, you know, are not residents of Carrboro right now, are not land that's not taxed by Carrboro town government, would not be affected by this rule?
I think that's correct, and I'm just looking for
that's
confirmation.
Correct. Okay. I just wanted to get clarification about that. Thanks. Go right ahead.
Okay. So this was motivated by our MPDS stormwater permit. We're in about halfway, a little over halfway through that. That's a five-year permit, and we are currently in year four. We brought this to your attention as part of the year three compliance for this permit, so I did want to bring to your attention that we really are a little bit behind in staying in compliance with our permit. At the time, we proposed a five-acre threshold in which this requirement would kick in. In other words, areas above 5 acres would apply to. that was motivated by looking at where the state's going and the draft Jordan Lake rules. So that's what the they were that's where they're at with those rules. We brought that to your attention. You asked us to do some more work to look at this further. And specifically, you were curious as to who would it apply to, and should the town consider a smaller threshold than 5 acres. So we updated you in October of 2008 addressing those points. And at that point in time, you recommended a 2-acre threshold, and that would affect, by our best judgment, doing some analysis of the GIS, a little bit less than 100 parcels, and there's some multiple owners, you know, some owners that are affected. So there, it actually is about 50 owners that would be affected. A good deal of that is public property, but there, of course, is some private property affected as well. And in the October meeting, you asked to set a public hearing for January. And so in preparation for that, we did our normal advertising, and we also sent letters of notification to those property owners that we thought would be potentially affected. And so we held the public hearing last month, as you recall, and you referred this back to us to provide a little bit more specificity to the requirements for nutrient management plans. So just in summary of what the amendment says, fertilizer, and that can not just be traditional chemical fertilizer, but it can be organic fertilizer as well. There's really two ways to comply with this amendment, and that's either by application by a certified applier, and that's in Part A1 of the amendment, or and the certification would be done by either, as spelled out at the state level, by either the Division of Water Quality, the Cooperative Extension Service, or through a plan as spelled out in A2. And we looked at the guidance coming from the state, and we recommended documents that are available, published by the Cooperative Extension Service, to satisfy this requirement. And so what we did between our last meeting and today is we developed Section D, which tried to provide some specificity for what would be in the plan based on the comments we received back at the public hearing. And then just to fill out the remainder of what's in the town code amendment, record-keeping requirements are provided in Section E. There's an encouragement, but not a requirement, for smaller lots included in Section F. And the effective date would be 30 days from adoption. I did want to speak a little bit more about that in just a moment. And I did want to also emphasize here that as this is drafted, there's no formal permitting or application process associated with this. So it really, would be pursued on a as-needed basis, if you will. You know, we're not going to ask people to go through any kind of permitting process. So I just wanted to show the map, and this is not, well, yeah, I guess it's showing up okay. The larger orange-brownish is the entire planning jurisdiction, and then the shaded area is the municipal limits in which this would apply.
Can I go back a second? So in terms of Mark's point, the parts within the boundary but that are white, those do not apply.
That's correct. Okay. Yeah. Just some notes and recommendations pursuant to our consideration of this since the last meeting. We strongly encourage you to adopt an ordinance in consideration of the MPDS permit. We think it might be prudent to consider a workshop to help folks with understanding the ordinance and folks who aren't sure about how to best meet the requirements, and we'd be happy to consider that. We're available as staff to, if folks are confused about how to meet the reporting requirements under the nutrient management plan, we'd be happy to make that as straightforward and as simple as possible. And if you'd like to see an early draft of what that form might look like. I can show you that. Our general, as we've discussed this in staff, I mean, our focus is on how to provide assistance to folks, and not we're not, you know, at a place of actively wanting to be hard-handed regulators with this. But we'd like to help folks as much as possible. And recognizing that this is a new program, this is really a new thing for us as staff and for the town as a whole, to, you know, just be judicious and reasonable with how we work in terms of how quickly we expect folks to respond and so forth. And I also wanted to be really clear as well that at the state level, and I hope there's no confusion out there about this, there's pretty extensive possibility for a lot of analysis to support this, and we're not proposing to go in that direction where people have to run software and so forth. I mean, we really have a simple form-based and, you know, people-based approach to trying to address this.
Okay.
So that's all I have.
Are there questions from...
Randy, do the landowners keep these records themselves, or do they give you a copy, or how's that?
The way we're thinking about that is they will keep them themselves, but make them available upon request.
Right. Okay.
Dan?
Could you explain, just for people who are listening who may not be familiar with it, what the NPDES is and how that places this requirement on it?
Yes, sure. NPDES is an acronym that stands for the National Pollution Discharge Elimination System. It's a federal law. It's part of the Clean Water Act. It's originally enacted in 1972, I believe. Has been updated many times since then. And in the 90s, it was updated to address urban stormwater runoff, which is why we're involved. That program got instituted in two phases. Phase one was for large municipalities and large industries, and phase two is for smaller municipalities. So we're in the phase two part of the program. And our permit, as I mentioned, was first put in, I think it was 2004. And so we're in.
Along those lines, you also mentioned a moment ago about new rules that the state is working on or considering regarding Jordan Lake. Can you address what the purpose of those rules are, or what the issue with Jordan Lake is?
Yes, yeah, sure. Jordan Lake, since it was impounded in the, you know, over it's been over almost 30 years ago now, has been continually studied for problems with over-enrichment from runoff from nitrogen and phosphorus, or the two pollutants of most concern. And this is causing algae to grow at an unnatural rate more rapidly and to accumulate to greater degrees that impacts the ecology of the lake as well as the human ability to use the water in the lake. And so that's been recognized for a long time, and in the past about decade, there's been tremendous amount of scrutiny and scientific studies that have led to some proposed rules to really further restrict the nutrient levels in the lake that would affect all of the watershed, which includes the triangle area as well as up to the triad.
So the state is considering, I mean, basically to kind of get it, you tell me if I've got this wrong, but I think basically the state is saying, look, Jordan Lake is too polluted with certain kinds of pollution, particularly nitrogen and phosphorus, and that they're telling the local governments that we need to take some action to reduce the amount of nitrogen and phosphorus that's washing into the lake from our local communities. And at the same time, the federal government is saying, is regulating us just as if we were running a factory, you know, a textile mill or something on the Haw River, saying the water that washes off of our yards and our streets, you know, is polluted, and that we as a town are responsible for reducing the amount of pollution that's washing into local creeks and from there into Jordan Lake.
That's correct. And and I would just, a little addendum is that it applies, the draft Jordan rules apply really to all sources of pollution, be they wastewater treatment plants, urban runoff, agricultural runoff, you know, really universally.
And those rules are going to affect what Orange County may do or what Chapel Hill will do in the future, or Durham, or a variety of local
right. And they're in front of the state legislature now for a final review at this point in time.
Okay. All right. Thanks for clarifying. I just wanted to make sure that I have the right context for what we're discussing here tonight. Did anybody else have a question before? I do have at least one person signed up. Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
And then. Just a follow-up. Is it required that we have such the 2-acre cutoff because of our NPDES?
We chose that number.
That's right. Strictly a local decision. There's no, you know, we're under the NPDES permit. We're setting up a program,
right?
But it doesn't really have specificity for much at all, including the threshold. That's really our choice.
No.
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
I just wanted to say I appreciate the recommendation for the workshop and the form, because that was a concern. I know when Liz Rooks was here before speaking that the guidelines that were set forth, these publications, she said they were, you know, pretty intense, and that you've noted other public, you said also other publications as well as, I think, this checklist and these measures, I think, will make this more manageable for folks to do.
Actually, I have one of the documents referred to. They're all very similar, and I have one here I can pull up and show you this. It's just like one page or two pages.
That's fine. That was my concern, was I didn't want it to be too burdensome on the landowners, but I wanted them to be able to see what was involved. So.
All right, John, and then I'll call on.
Randy, during the public hearing, a citizen came and spoke about how she is trained and applies, and her neighbor applies the fertilizers herself in a more effective and conscientious way than a professional person would or was doing it. What impact will it have in this ordinance if we exclude single family residential property owners?
It would just reduce the amount of area that would be affected. I don't have the exact statistics on how much it would reduce it immediately available. I mean, we've done the work that we can produce that, but I'm thinking it's roughly a quarter to a third of the affected area as drafted now.
Yeah, John, we had a table that we all looked at back at the October meeting that showed for different categories of ownership and different size properties, how many parcels and how much acreage were in each one. And we set the limits based on what was optimal in terms of where you would get the largest number with the smallest number of categories. Or at least that's how I understood it.
I'd just like to add that after Ms. Rooks came and spoke to us, she's the woman you're referring to, that's when we sent it back to staff and ask them to work with Ms. Rooks to come up with what's before us tonight. And that's what they did. They worked to answer Liz's concerns.
Okay.
And that's why we made the changes.
I think it would be fair to say that she's nonetheless not in love with this proposal. But okay, let me call on, I have Karen McAdams signed up to speak.
Thank you very much, Board of Aldermen and Mayor. Appreciate you letting me speak. My name is Karen McAdams, and I'm the agricultural agent with the Cooperative Extension Service here in Orange County. I work with farmers and landowners, and we did have this issue came to my attention probably about a week ago. Didn't know anything about it before then. We do have some landowners who are here who came just to sort of, because they wanted to hear about this, and up until late this afternoon, we thought that it did apply to the ETJ area, which would include right many traditional farmers in that area. So anyway, I guess I do have a few comments to make. First off, you know, thank you for your dedication for supporting agriculture over the years through the Carrboro Farmers Market, one of the best ones in the whole state. We do appreciate that, and obviously, you know, you're at the forefront in helping to protect water quality, and that is certainly commendable. Some of the concerns, you know, among folks who do have farms or horses is, and landowners, is about the regulation of agriculture. We went through this with the Neuse River Basin rule several years ago in the northern part of the county, and there were some, you know, quite a lot of concerns about, you know, the government telling folks what they could or couldn't do with their land and with their farming operations. I did pull up the Jordan Water Supply Nutrient Fertilizer Management proposals that are currently pending in the legislature, I guess, for comparison. And this regulation would be more restrictive. The way the current proposed Jordan Lake rules are, it would be for 5-acre minimum lot size, as opposed to this being 2-acre minimum lots. I guess a couple of other things. This would, if the Jordan Lake regulations are approved, then this would set up a situation where you do have two sets of rules in the same watershed, and it could be confusing to people, and certainly confusing for people who are trying to educate people, such as myself and the other folks in my office. Another comment I would have is the your proposal here does indicate some, you know, help with training and nutrient management plans by Cooperative Extension Service, and we have not been involved up to this point, and we certainly would like to be involved. It also indicates that this would go into effect within 30 days, and that certainly is not enough time to develop training modules, to educate people, to let everybody know who would be affected. Also to work with folks with nutrient management plans if that's necessary. In addition, usually NCSU, the soils and water quality specialists, are also involved in coming up with some of these training tools, and you know, we'd like to get them involved as well. And you know, farming and agriculture is hard enough without excessive regulations. I guess a couple of possibilities, thoughts that come to mind would be, one would be to allow for more time for the Extension Service and the Soil Science Department at State and possibly other agencies such as Orange Soil and Water Conservation District, who traditionally have been writing the nutrient management plans here in the county, to get together with Carrboro staff and come up with some proposals and possible ways of implementing these educational and nutrient management requirements. Another possibility would be that the Jordan Lake rules are currently being debated in the General Assembly, and what about the possibility of just waiting to see what the state rules wind up looking like before enacting the rules here? Another possibility would be to address the need for managing nutrients and fertilizers by simply using public educational programs. Carrboro is a town that is certainly a leader in public awareness of environmental issues, and educational programs have been successful over the years in things such as recycling, et cetera. So I think that a strong educational program might preclude the need for regulations in this area. In conclusion, the Orange County Cooperative Extension Service and Orange County and NC State are certainly willing to help with educational programs to improve water quality and nutrient management issues here. We would like more time to put together specifics of potential programs. And again, thanks for your past support of agriculture. Anything you can do to be supportive of agriculture in Carrboro and in its ETJ is certainly appreciated.
Thank you.
Before you sit down, could you say, in terms of developing the educational materials that your office would be involved in, what would you see as a reasonable time frame for working with our staff to develop those?
I don't know. I mean, when, for example, when the Neuse River rules were put into effect, we did have, there was some training components for that. That was several years ago, and a lot of the training materials were put together by soil science specialists at NC State. I don't know. I would say several months to really put together things. I mean, certainly you could.
3 months, maybe.
Probably more than that. Probably longer than that.
6 months?
Probably.
Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. I know there are a bunch more folks here who are interested in this issue. No one else has signed up. Would anybody else like to grab the mic, jump up right now? You don't have to. Okay. Come on up.
We could ask how many live in the ETJ.
And yeah. We'll do that.
I'm Betsy Saul. I'm better known in the area as Toy Cheek, Toy and Francis Cheek's neighbor. I recently have moved to Carrboro. I'm brand new here. And have invested heavily in Carrboro. I'm one of the 50 property owners that represents three of the parcels, and am actually inside the city. So I'm one of the people that would be affected by this ordinance. And I guess first and foremost, I'd like to support Karen and her team. My background is actually I have a master's in groundwater hydrology, and I'm a former agricultural extension agent. And the first thing I did when I read this is I thought, I wonder if extension people know that they're going to be doing this, because it certainly is. There's a history of those kinds of surprises coming up with great organizations like extension. So I think that at the least, it would be really good to have a task force set up with those people who would actually be doing the training and give them time to prepare for an educational program. And secondly, I chose Carrboro because it's so cool. You know, and I think even the things that you've mentioned several times, you're like, this is why we're so cool, you know. This is a community that I think most of the private property owners, two-acre parcels and five-acre parcels, are folks that more than anywhere I've ever lived, and I've lived all around the country, are doing things because it's the right thing to do. One of the concerns I have about this ordinance when I read it through the first time is that as my own personal experience, being lazy, I just purchased this property. I have 20 acres on Winsome Lane. I just purchased this property, and the previous owners used Davy Tree Expert or Davy Lawn Care Experts, who come to my property 8 times a year and put down copious amounts of fertilizer and treat my agricultural, land around my house, which should be pretty rough, like it's a golf course. I spend $3,000 a year on an annual contract with them so that they can put down about 6 times more fertilizer than I need. They never do soil samples. And my decision this year to be lazy was because I just moved here and this is what's been going on this land, and I'm going to evaluate it. And then by next year, I'll work with Extension and get soil samples and start turning this property and doing the right thing, because I'm one of the kinds of people that moves to Carrboro. I think that we're attracted to this community. When I got this letter, I thought, I'm going to have to continue just using the service. Because I'm trying to be a small gentleman farmer in a community. You know, I have another job, and to have another hurdle of the things that I have to submit management plans for and things like this it's another hurdle. And so, like Liz said last week, who's my neighbor, and I think Sheila Northern also has expressed this, for those of us that actually want to get out and work our land and do the right thing and use the appropriate amount of fertilizer, we're actually being disincented to do that by having an obstacle put forth that will actually cause us to use service. And the services, for the most part, I was a horticultural agent. The services, for the most part, are large companies who have a vested interest in over-fertilizing. They, that's their job. They make their money on selling fertilizer. A second problem that I have with the ordinance, which is actually pretty significant, is the effect and the impact on small farmers. You know, I don't think that there are very many 20-acre farms in the city limits. I hope I'm not the only one. I suspect that there are others. But I think that, you know, we have state and federal right to farm laws for a reason, you know, and I think, like, you know, Extension themselves have a mandate to support small farms. You know, our farmers market is not the best in the state. I think it's been rated the best in the nation. Yeah, I think that it's troubling for me to see the list of, and not troubling, again, it's probably appropriate to some extent because, like I said, there are so few farms within the city limits, but the management plan option, which is what I would choose as a, you know, as a farmer, lists the things that I need to be tracking are things that are all appropriate for turf management. They're not things necessarily that are appropriate for farm management. So, for instance, the company that comes in and does the aerification of my turf, which is appropriate for a postage stamp lawn and a golf course and a large corporate field, which I think absolutely those kinds of in public parks, you know, this is where most of the fertilizer runoff is coming from, these sort of large scale turf, you know, heavily managed areas. You know, the little area that I'm getting core aerified, it's $625. And for my 20-acre farm to have a management plan that incorporates, you know, that kind of aeration that this is suggesting is a pretty significant, you know, and, well, I mean, it makes farming not an option, frankly. You know, it's in my case, $600 times 20. So I think that if we do adopt an ordinance that has this, I think that an exemption for farmers or an exception for farmers, something that takes into account the fact that if you're managing, well, you know, and actually the new options that we're going to have for conservation and wildlife management are going to have these same sort of, you know, issues. If you're putting in, you know, prairie grasses and trying to encourage, you know, neotropical migrants to come through the way I think our new conservation, you know, plans are going to allow us to do through the new county, you know, options to have conservation assessment as opposed to just farm assessment, you know, we shouldn't be going in and managing in the way that you'd manage for turf. So I think that we need to, you know, go back to the drawing board a little bit with the help of our friends at Extension and, you know, if we can't table this until we find out what the state's going to do, and that's going to be a heated debate, I'm sure, because I have an under good authority that the North Carolina Farm Bureau is going to get involved with that. So I think that that'll be fun. But, you know, I think that at the very minimum, we need to make some allowances for the new kinds of land that we're trying to get homeowners to develop, which is, you know, encouraging small farming, encouraging conservation easements. You know, we can't manage conservation easements the way we manage golf courses.
So will you chair this committee?
I'd be happy to.
Get that application out now.
I mean, it sounds like we still have some work to do. I mean, mm-hmm. We're trying to do the right thing, and we're also, I mean, when we look at the cost to the municipality coming down the road or coming down the creek, it's huge. So we're trying to do the right thing environmentally and financially.
Let me jump in and just comment on, you know, just clarify what Jackie means when she says the cost to the municipality, because where all of those, that state and federal process are headed, the direction they're headed is that they want us to go in and build stormwater detention ponds and sediment retention, this and that, and build all these ponds to capture the stormwater coming that's flowing off of our existing built town. They want us to go in and say, you know, well, most of the town was built without any real stormwater management plan. They want us to come in and retrofit it all. And the question is, well, where do you put it? Whose property would it be on? And would we have to buy buy people's properties in order to build these ponds and do all this stuff? It's very expensive proposition.
It seems like we have an application for the new the new dollars that have just come out of the federal government.
Well, I mean, it really is a huge problem, and it's a big problem for us as a town, but it's really, honestly, it's a big problem for municipalities all across the country that are looking at these kind of situations. I'm just trying to, I wanted to put into context what it is that we're worried about that would be expensive. And so to the extent, if I may just finish the thought, just to the extent that if we can find some kind of reasonable way to rein in, because I know that most farmers are not, going out and trying to spend six times as much as they need on fertilizer. Obviously not. Why would you do that? But we're just trying to think of ways to reduce the amount of, phosphorus that, in particular, that's being applied to the soil in our community in order to try and reduce the burden on all of us as taxpayers that we're going to have to pay in trying to develop these detention ponds. I'm sorry, Jackie, I just had
No. Thank you. You finished that better than I could have, so thank you.
Dan,
were you finished with your statement?
I would just say that I think that, Jackie's absolutely right. I think that the reason that we're doing this is incredibly righteous. And I sit, because I have a background in groundwater hydrology, I'm a diehard bunny hugger. But I've also been an ag agent, and I'm also a farmer. I had a 65-acre farm in Jersey before I moved here. And I think there is a way to marry both things, and I think that we need to look at where the groundwater nutrients or pollutants, if you will, are actually coming from in this community. And I'd really love to see an analysis of, our public spaces and our large, I don't know if we have a lot of large corporate lots and things like that, but it's an interesting problem because you do have to marry a lot of different things. But in this case, in my experience and in my graduate work, we found that all kinds of lands aren't created equally when it comes to this kind of runoff.
All right. Thanks very much.
Dan. Thanks. So. I want to follow on Jackie because I think you were suggesting that we're not ready to act on this tonight. And from what I heard, I heard three things that I want to suggest need to happen. One is that staff should meet with the Ag Extension people and figure out exactly what's involved in getting the training component together, because we can't put an effective date into this until we know when we're going to be able to do that training. So that's number one. Number two would be to have a continued discussion with the folks on Winsome Lane and anyone else who might be relevant on this notion that these regulations might be an obstacle to them doing the right thing that they would do anyway. And, that doesn't really seem like what we want to do. So is that the case, and can that be resolved? And then the third, and which could perhaps be part of that same discussion and more broadly, is whether there is a distinction that would be relevant between, in terms of the items in this new Section D, what would be relevant for a farm management program as opposed to a turf management program, and that if there is such a thing, that should be specified. Huh. In the language of the ordinance. So those are the three items I heard.
Great.
That we would want to pay attention.
Great.
To.
Sandra, Dan, let me just
clarify
that the training that you're talking about is with ag, is that separate or inclusive of the workshops for the community folks who are involved? Because I heard that initially separate ag.
Yeah, what I'm suggesting is that we need to have the effectiveness date needs to be after the training's in place, whatever the training is going to include, whether it's the workshops or other materials or the involvement of Ag Extension in some direct or ongoing way, whatever that might be.
I'm breaking as our agronomist.
I would like to move that we table this issue until we address all those concerns.
That Dan just brought up.
I would second that, except I would like for the meeting from the people who are here and others in their situation, I would like that to happen first, because I think they have some information that we need and some guidance that we can really learn from as we move on to the next two steps. So let's get real clear on exactly what it is we're trying to do, and then we can meet, then we can ask the ag agents to put together a training program after we know what that is. And I think these people have the information on what it is we're trying to do. Does that fit in with what you were saying?
Yeah, it does. I mean, I normally wouldn't suggest to staff, you know, the sequence in which they do their work. I would figure they would figure that out, but if you want to,
I'd like to. Yeah. Right. Yes, I'd like to ask that we first try to convene a meeting where we're learning from, you know, folks like that spoke to us tonight.
Okay. So basically, that my second two points should be addressed prior to the first one.
Exactly.
Okay. That's the second. That a second? That's the second and clarification of the motion, I assume. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passes unanimously. So I saw somebody was passing around a clipboard back there. Can any of you who would like to be contacted by us in the future so that you would know about when we're going to meet about this or have any conversations about it, can we get some names and addresses and phone numbers from y'all for that purpose? Is that what that clipboard is?
Or we can send around a separate sheet if you like.
Or we can set up a separate sheet, but
that's not what this clipboard is.
I see.
Okay.
Okay. How many of y'all live within the Carrboro town limits, if I could ask? Okay.
Farmers, Bob.
Bob.
Farmer, Bob.
Indicated that you Bob, your lot is definitely less than 2 acres. All right. Yes, sir. I understand. Right. I understand. Yes, sir.
In town, who spend spend more dollars than I do on my little 12 or 13 acres that I've actually grazed and farmed, as opposed to what they spend on a lot in a year. I guarantee you they spend more on their lot in a year than I spend on my farm in 3 years.
Well, and they probably put more phosphorus still on it, too. Yes, sir. Because we didn't necessarily get the sequence of events right leading up to tonight, y'all didn't hear some of our previous conversations about this, but I think all of us are real clear that, you know, services like ChemLawn and that type of thing are a much bigger part of the problem, frankly, and for a lot less purpose, for a lot less, you know, useful reason. And I think part of our frustration, quite frankly, is that we don't seem to have, Mr. Attorney, you correct me if I'm wrong, but apparently we have very little say-so over what companies like that do, and we don't, I mean.
Well, I think that basically that's true in terms of, you know, there were some discussions about regulations about taxing or the kinds of products that they use and that sort of thing, and I don't think we have control over that. I think, you know, in terms of this type of program, I think as to whether or not we could impose this same kind of approach on much smaller than 2 acre tracts. I mean, if you'd be picking up every lawn, I mean, and I think that was, I mean, that's theoretically possible, but an almost practically administering. I mean, as was pointed out earlier, we have to keep in mind that the specific reason we're doing this is because the NPDES permit requires us to do something. Now, we may not have the something right as it's presently drafted, I think that it's fair to say that's the impetus, is it not? I mean, that is that federal requirement that is part of our permit that we are attempting to respond to. So it wasn't just something that somebody dreamed up as a good thing to do one day.
Stop finding where the damage is being done.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Well, let's do that. Let's do that.
Let's do that. And
okay.
And we don't feel like we should be penalized for larger acreage the damage is coming from small rain.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. We're risking our livelihood along with it.
Right.
I follow you.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
You just can't do it.
Okay.
One, you're going to get the last word.
Thank you.
So, okay, that was it.
Something that you might consider that might have a huge impact on the Kimelon type issues is if, I don't know if this is possible in Carborough, but if you could, if there was a way that you could incent property owners to use local businesses typically have already been trained for extension. They are often using beneficial insects, and they're using much better systems than the big companies. And so if you have a way through taxation or through incentive programs of any kind to incent people to use local services as opposed to the national companies, then you would probably have a far greater impact than any other system.
That's a great point.
And we do have a local
That was the last word. We didn't even listen to you. That was the last
folks.
Word.
Mine's just really quick. Honestly, I haven't been down here in a long time, so I just want to say one thing.
Okay.
As y'all know, I mean, we sell organic materials. We sell soil amendments and topsoil and that kind of stuff. And to me, I find this so insulting that y'all would write that no person may apply nutrients, including fertilizer, biosolids, or compost, to any land area that exceeds 2 acres in size, or cause, suffer, or permit the application of such nutrients to any land area that exceeds 2 acres in size under the control of such person, unless you have all this stuff. I mean, unless you are a trained person. That's saying that a person that has 2 acres, 1 acre, half acre, or 10, doesn't have enough sense in their head to put out a soil amendment and let alone. You need to reword this thing.
Well, I'm clear about that last part in particular, that it needs to be reworded. So we're going to work on it. All right. We're on.
You understand we tabled this thing?
Yeah, we're not. We're gonna move forward with having some additional discussion, hopefully with some of y'all about this, and also agricultural extension among others. So we're not taking any action right now on this particular. As far as adopting any particular proposal. All right, agenda item 6.
Well, thank you for coming out and educating us tonight.
Thank you, yes. And thank can we get can those of you who want to be contacted in the future about this issue, can we get some names and phone numbers? Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, there is. All right, great. Thank you very much. All right. By the way, ma'am, the last speaker, could you tell me your name? I'm sorry. Linda Roberts. Okay. Thank you, Mrs. Roberts. All right. Item 6 is there a motion for the budget ordinance?
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. Matter passed unanimously. We got a couple of quick things.
Very quick. Your congressman will be at the Southern Human Services Center to talk to anyone that wants to talk about the stimulus package or anything else that bothers you about Washington. That's at 7:30 on Thursday.
Say that
again? It's at 7:30 on Thursday. Congressman Price will be at the Southern Human Services
Center. Yes.
Yeah, I have two things. The first is at the Transit Partners meeting this morning, the idea was suggested of putting wraps on buses and
advertising.
I know what I think about wraps on buses, but I felt like I wanted to make sure I knew what you all think. Yeah, basically, it's advertising that covers the whole bus.
Oh, the whole
bus. And typically, they're from national firms. And, so it's kind of like a moving billboard going through town.
Right.
How much money
do you have? Well, it would save Carborough about $28,000.
That's not enough. Now, Rick saved us about $1 million.
One particular question I had was whether it's possible to specify that the wraps only could advertise local businesses and that they had to be designed by local artists. Mm-hmm. But Mark was telling me he thought that was not legal. And Mike, do you have any thought on that? That you couldn't.
Well, obviously, I've heavily researched it. I give my off-the-cuff opinions. I'm not sure why that would be Well,
I guess the issue could be, in a past life, I had a discussion with a different town attorney who was of the opinion that, for example, if you're approached by Marlboro Cigarettes about advertising, or if you were approached by Playboy Magazine about advertising, that that essentially once you've opened up the forum of the side of your bus, that you couldn't really have content-based restrictions on what would be advertised.
Well, that certainly is true, but I don't know that that principle necessarily answers that question, because okay. I don't think you would have it as an open forum. What you clearly can't do is to say anybody can advertise on the bus and then start choosing among the one. But if you had guidelines that said we will accept advertisements only from local firms or something, it's not entirely clear to me off the top of my head.
Can we refer that matter to the attorney to contemplate a little further?
Sure, that's fine.
Is that right?
Martin, please just contemplate. Quickly, I'm also in Transit Partners, and I didn't totally abandon the idea, because it would save a couple hundred thousand for all the partners to have some type of advertising. But I do agree that we ought to look into what type it is, and I like the idea of looking into local advertisers.
Okay. Well, was there?
Yeah, I have one other thing, and I think everyone's probably too tired to really consider what I'm about to suggest. So just shut me down quick if you need to. But I was reflecting on our discussion of the anti-lingering ordinance last week, and I kind of felt like we might have acted prematurely in scheduling the public hearing. And there's two reasons for that. One is that, the primary one is I think that in the work session, you know, we were focused on the anti-lingering ordinance, you know, which is what was on our agenda. But really, there's the underlying question of the whole problem of the day laborer pickup being at that site and what that brings into that neighborhood that I think we should discuss more broadly in terms of what, if there are other possible solutions that we need to revisit, or if there are things that we can come up with or look to staff for that have perhaps have not been done in the past, and that if we do that, then it would be premature in March to ask all the neighbors to come in and tell us basically what we already know. And I think we all agree that the behaviors the neighbors are telling us about, we don't want there. And I think we pretty much all agree with the civil libertarians who don't want us to infringe on people's right to be on the streets. But, you know, right now those are bumping up against each other for lack of another solution. So I guess what I'm wondering, what I want to put out there and just to see what your reaction is that maybe we return to the work session with the broader question and hold off on having the public hearing until we've looked at that.
Here and then there.
I don't have a problem with delaying it and discussing it more, because everybody kind of knows what my position is about repealing the ordinance without any sort of mechanism for the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So I don't have a problem with that. My only issue would be is that everybody in the neighborhood understand, you know, there needs to be, even if they come on the 24th, explain to them that we're not going to repeal the ordinance, but there's going to be further discussion, and that the neighborhood knows that. Because I've, you know, spoken to, you know, just this morning, one of the neighbors, and, you know, I won't go into a lot of things, but their feeling is that their neighborhood shouldn't be treated any different from other neighborhoods in terms of quality of life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they understand the civil libertarian thing, too, but they are really, 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 and I say that to you now, really, really, in some respects, disappointed with the board because there wasn't more neighborhood interaction about the discussion. So I'll leave it at that.
Randy and then you.
Yeah. I was just going to add that I agree with Dan, because I feel the one piece that we don't have an update on it. I downloaded all of the police action, and I went through and highlighted. It was like 40 pages, man, and it was pretty unbelievable. But I'd like us to be able to have enough time to not only get a little bit more homework done on where we are with in regard to day workers and community efforts to find another site for them and find out also in this economy right now, what is the percentage of day laborers that are being dropped off? And if staff has some way of finding that number, or the PD has a way of finding out, you know, in the early morning hours, how many folks are there now as opposed to, you know, what was, because the economy is kind of shifted. So I would support, you know, taking more time to have further discussion and gather more information. But I do agree that, you know, for the neighbors, they want some, they want some solutions to their ills, and they want to feel safe.
Jack.
I'd like to separate out the day labor issue from the right to stand on the street corner and harass people as they walk by issue. You know, I think we need to have a place for day laborers. I get really tired of hearing of when we want to stop people from harassing women and young girls, Hispanic women and young girls included in that group.
Not just Hispanic.
No, what I'm saying is, because when you say this, people say, oh, you're anti-Hispanic. No, because Hispanic women and girls don't appreciate being harassed by groups of drunken men any more than any other women and girls do. You know, we have a right to live without ourselves and our daughters having vile things said to them as they pass by, or being afraid to be in our homes. That's a whole separate issue from people having a place to be while they wait to be picked up for work.
That's right.
Being able to walk down a public street and feel safe, I'm sorry, that's a civil liberty, isn't it? You know? So I think we need to watch how we're framing this conversation. And yes, let's help the day laborers. It's not the day laborers that are there in the afternoon with a bottle in their back pocket doing God knows what behind the fence or somebody else's fence and saying God knows what to people that walk by. You do not have the right to verbally intimidate and harass people as they walk by and to make them feel unsafe in their homes. That is not a civil liberty. That is infringing on other people's, generally women's, civil liberties. So this is probably a conversation we want to have later.
So is that a motion,
yeah.
Dan?
Not later tonight. Though.
But not later tonight.
This is getting to the day laborer point. I think we ought to, when we have this discussion, we ought to really brainstorm, and all possibilities ought to be on the table. And I know I wasn't here before, but let's really think through, is there anywhere we could have the day laborers move?
Well, since you weren't here before, you come up with the idea.
All right, I will.
We'll assign it to you.
what's your motion?
Is to cancel the public hearing for March 24th. On the anti-lingering ordinance and schedule a work session on the broader questions of that corner and what's happening there and what possible solutions might be.
I'll second that with the understanding that I know staff will, but just sufficient notes will be put to the neighborhood because there were many that were
we already put it out there that we were doing it, but
right.
So as long
right.
as, yeah, we need to get the word out
right.
that,
yeah.
that has been canceled. So.
But don't you think folks are going to show up at our work session and want to talk about it because this is happening every day in their life?
Yes,
I
do.
But I think we need a chance to talk about it.
All right.
Okay.
Meanwhile, I would like to say we have laws in the books, even before the anti-lingering ordinance, that will put anyone who's drinking or smoking pot or doing something illegal in the street or urinating or defecating or harassing folks. Let's enforce the law. Let's pick up the folks who are doing that. If somebody drinking out there, put them in jail. Pick them up.
Let me address that point just briefly and say, but I have in the past had the experience of driving down Jones Ferry Road and seeing somebody plainly drinking like malt liquor, and I call 911 and the police come, and by the time they get there, only a few minutes later, he's gone or he's stepped onto private property or he's finished off what he's drinking, and you know there's not the opportunity, and you know as soon as he sees a cop car come into sight,
that thing goes into the trash can. So it's not as simple as, you know, how do you actually prove it? How do you actually catch somebody in the act of doing these things in a way that's actually enforceable by the police?
You have to be sitting there waiting to monitor them, which becomes, you know, a whole other issue.
All of these things are things that we can discuss at the proposed work session. Yeah. I suppose. I honestly think that I want to suggest, actually, to Jackie's point, but maybe opposite to her line of thinking, that we really ought to decide that we are not going to receive public comment at that work session, because if we receive public comment at the work session on this topic, we will never get to the part where we have a conversation amongst ourselves about. Right.
That's a lot of discipline.
Well, not if we decide that now. Do you see what I'm saying?
If you do decide that now, then it has to be consistently enforced to everybody. So people can't go, well, I just want them to respond to that. Right. I mean, it either has to be for everybody or nobody. Because the first time, you know.
Yep.
So okay. Maybe not even Bob Kirshner.
And maybe we can give people a date of when the public hearing will be following that, so they don't think that we're just shutting this down and we're not going to hear them.
Well, if we need a public hearing, if we don't do anything,
depends on what we do, whether we're having a hearing or not. So.
Another adding things to what Dan said. What we did was a knee-jerk reaction. We did an enforcement, exactly what the federal government did on immigration issues. This is part of the economy, of the immigration issue of this country. And we just acted on that to a very particular corner of the town, which doesn't solve the problem. We can enforce the law all we want, and still that problem's not going to go away. We need to either put the resources necessary and just be as mean as we can, and we can clean up house there and run them out of town the same way you run drug dealers and drug users, or we do a comprehensive approach and we educate folks and we really work with the communities and the schools and the folks who live there and do a heavy duty approach that solves the problem and look for there is place in town. I don't buy that little piece of town of property just. Of course, it's expensive, but we're all benefiting from it. I mean, these people are being hired by someone here in town or out of town. So somehow we need to address the issue locally, multi-town, regionally, whatever. But education is a major component of it.
Okay.
Enforcement alone is not going to do it.
Nobody's saying enforcement alone.
But these are the kind of issues that we need to discuss at that.
But the quality of life for people living in an area ought to be recognized.
Yeah.
And you don't have an absolute right to be an ass. You just don't. There's nothing in the Constitution that says it, and there's no particular interpretation that says it is.
Yep. And it's not an immigration
issue. Mark, you need to be reminded of that point.
On whether
you'll
allow comments at that or.
Yeah, well, I guess I was suggesting that you make that a part of your motion if you're willing to.
Okay. Yeah, I'll move that we not accept public comment at that particular work session and okay. Focus on our discussion.
Is that acceptable to the seconder?
Am I the seconder?
You were.
That's acceptable as long as everybody
rigorously
is notified.
Rigorously
enforced, and everybody is notified prior to the meeting.
Okay. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passes unanimously. All right. Thanks, y'all.
Thanks.
Is there a motion to adjourn?
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passes unanimously.